From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, a little walk on the paranormal side with Jeffrey Mishlove. Here's what's happening. Health officials have traced an outbreak of a very rare fungal meningitis to a Massachusetts specialty pharmacy that distributes a steroid injection commonly used to treat back pain. So far, 35 people have been diagnosed with this infection in six states. Five of them have died. About 75 clinics in 23 states receive batches of the steroid drug, and they've been told to notify all affected patients. The 35 cases include 25 people in Tennessee, North Carolina, Florida, Virginia, Maryland, Indiana as well. Unbelievable. An American maker of chicken jerky dog treats has recalled 2.5-pound packages of the product because it may be contaminated with salmonella bacteria that could cause illness in the dog. Castle Associated Industries of Denver has voluntarily pulled its Nature's Deli chicken jerky dog treats, distributed through 57 Sam Club stores in a dozen states. As we reported last night, all kinds of problems in Iran, protests over the plunging of its currency. So far, 40%. And today, Iran has deployed riot police at key Tehran intersections after tensions flared over the nation's plunging currency. And now the most widespread display of anger linked to the country's sanctions hit economy. Damon Vickers, of course, founder of Nine Points Management and Research, a Seattle-based investment firm. He has launched a private fund in 2008. That rose 63% and a frequent guest on business television programs. Let's check in with him on this. Damon, what do you think of this? Has this been created?
It might have been. I mean, you'd like to think that it was because it sure is working. I mean, what brings down an economy or a country faster than a total free fall in the basic stock of the country, their currency?
Well, we saw what happened to the Soviet Union when they had economic problems and they ended up falling apart and collapsing. I've got a friend who moved here several years ago from Iran. He owns his own parking valet company in Los Angeles. He's very successful. He told me a week ago, Damon, he said, the money in Iran, the rial, R-I-A-L, I guess, is collapsing and people are really ticked off. He said, you don't need to have a war in Iran. They're going to eat away inside.
Yeah. I think it's a regime change. I mean, you've got 75 million people in Iran. The sanctions have, I guess, begun to take hold. They're really taking their toll. They're exporting about 1 million barrels a day. Do the math, 1 million barrels times about $90 a barrel in the free market, that's $90 million of currency exchange with the world, mostly to China. And that's $90 million of gross receipts around 75 million people. It just, the math doesn't add up. Ahmadinejad has been printing like crazy. Liquidity has gone up seven times higher than when he arrived and when he took office. The Revolutionary Guard is at odds with Ahmadinejad. As you said before, there's protests, there's riots. The Grand Bazaar has been shut down. This was essentially the place where the revolution initially started when they took Khomeini took power and all that. China has been a buyer of their oil, though. The question is, will they step in now?
I heard you could buy a great house in Iran for about 10,000 U.S.
Yeah, well,
not that you want to buy one.
Take your pick.
Yeah, you got that right. Damon, thank you. Your website, of course, DamonVickers.com, part of our Twitter feed at CoastToCoastAM.com. Solar activity very low right now. Sunspot activity is flaring, but so far we've been lucky. The forecasters say 5% chance of M flares, a 1% chance of an X flare over the next day or two. Physicist James McCanny with us. James, what do you think about the sun these days here, Mr. McCanny?
Well, George, it is at a low ebb. It really hasn't done much for years. And now we're trying to head into this solar cycle, and it's just these two sunspots are large, sunspot 1582 and 1579, large enough that people have observed them from Earth. And when the sun is setting, they can see the sunspots. And also be careful, don't look at the sun with your naked eye. We always have to insert that. But yeah, the sun is just not active at all. It doesn't have enough energy to drive storm systems on Earth. So yeah, it's at a very low ebb, and it just doesn't have any power. These sunspots normally this size would be linked together and causing some flaring or other activity, but they're just at zero. The solar wind dynamic pressure is almost at zero and has been for months.
Does this mean a very cold winter, maybe?
I don't know. These predictions are hard to make. Sometimes they're kind of the opposite, but it could be. We're in a drought, which means that the sun is not vaporizing water from the oceans. That's where rain comes from. The majority of our rain comes from evaporated water from the oceans, and it's not happening. That's why we're in a major drought all over. So, yeah, this is a strange behavior, and I don't know where it's headed. I'm very not apt to make predictions about, like, the winter, but we are a full month advanced in fall. The leaves are falling in the northern states. The apples were ready a full month early, and so it could be a sign of a very early, long, extended winter.
So well, you may be right, James. James' website, part of our Twitter feed, too, at coasttocoastam.com. Well, an aspirin a day might keep the doctor away, but an aspirin a day may also slow brain decline in elderly women at high risk of cardiovascular disease. I would guess the same would be the same for a guy. Around 500 at-risk women between the ages of 70 and 92 were tracked for 5 years. Their mental capacity was tested at the start and end of the study. Those taking aspirin for the entire period saw their test scores fall much less than those who did not. Facebook reaches 1 billion users. Topping this 1 billion mark means that Facebook now reaches 1 out of every 7 people on the planet. Lauren Weinstein's with us here. Lauren, so you got all these people on Facebook, but is anybody buying anything off of Facebook?
Yeah, a billion people, and they still don't know how to make any money. They seem to have a new strategy, though. They announced today that if you want your Facebook postings to get priority in other Facebook users' streams, you can pay Facebook $7 per posting. So, and then for that $7, your brilliant, you know, exciting posting will get some priority. I actually asked Facebook. I wanted to know, do they mark that in some way so that it's clear that you paid for it? And it turns out that they say it's sponsored. And, you know, I guess if all the, you know, if a billion people paid $7 to get their postings that kind of priority,
oh my gosh,
there's a quick $7 billion right there.
And what if you want to post another one, another seven?
So the money could come rolling in. But in reality, they've got the same problems they did before. They don't know how to make money on mobile, which is very, very important. Their stock is still down in the dumps. It's 21.60, I think, was where it closed today. And in general, they still don't know how to sell ads in a way that's really going to work for Facebook. Because it's different than Google. You know, when you go to Google to do a search, you're usually looking for something to buy, perhaps.
That's right.
When you go onto Facebook, you kind of just want to chat.
You just want to chat, look at what your friends are doing and doing stuff like that. You're not in the market to buy something.
Exactly. So I think what's going on now, they're trying different things. That's a good idea. But unless they find a way to turn this around, especially get more growth in the U.S., because that's just come basically to a halt, it's going to be a long, slow slog. And, of course, people who bought that stock up when it was about twice the value it is now are still not very happy.
Of course, my goal, Lauren, is 1 billion Coast Insiders listening to this program. That's pretty novel, huh? We'll go for that.
And, of course, if you charge them $1 each.
That's
right?
Not bad. All right, Lauren, thanks. Appreciate it. It's only 15 cents a day, by the way. It's not a dollar. Up next, we're going to be talking about real wolfmen. That's right. Linda Godfrey joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Linda Godfrey, one of the most respected authorities on anomalous animals and phenomenon all over the place, specifically too in Wisconsin. As a journalist, she was the first to break the story of a very terrifying werewolf, just monster-like, lurking in the shadow-shrouded forests surrounding Elkhorn, Wisconsin's Ray Roach. He's back. Linda, how are you?
I'm great, George, and thanks so much for having me again.
Real wolfmen.
Yes.
They're everywhere, aren't they?
They appear that way.
Tell us what they might be.
Well, there are several different theories. There is the idea that they're either some type of specially adapted, evolved wolf species that has found it advantageous to walk and run around on its hind legs, carry things in its forelimbs, or that there's some type of spirit creature, which would be the prevailing theory among many Native American tribal elders that I've interviewed.
Well, you know, these animals that so many people report, and we're going to take some calls later. I'm sure they'll be reporting some stories here too. Do they seem to harm people, or do they just, you know, run off?
Well, this is the crazy thing, George. In 20 years, I've been investigating these creatures now. I've only received one report of an actual injury, and it was fairly superficial. It was sort of a cut along the man's side and hip that he incurred while hiking in Quebec, and the thing lunged at him. He thought it was just going to kill him, and instead it just grazed his hip and kept going. And he said he thinks that was accidental, because he said it could have just, you know, disemboweled me if it had wanted to with the size and speed it had. But in 20 years, hundreds of sightings, that's the only injury. However, many, many people have felt that the creature wanted to eat them. They'll say, I thought it was lunch. Or they'll just have an intense fear reaction.
But that could be normal.
Well, yes, you would expect. That's to be expected. But what happens is that once they get to that maximum point of fear, the creature always invariably leaps off into the cornfield or some brushes or whatever happens. Brush, I should say, that's not plural. Whatever happens to be handy to disappear into. And it's time after time after time, unrelated sightings from around the U.S. and the world, that this behavior is the same.
Well, I was told when I was a kid, Linda, that a dog can sense if you're afraid of it or not. Did you ever hear that?
Yeah, I've heard that, you know, and I think there probably is some truth to that, because they have such sharp senses of smell, so many thousands of times greater than human. You know, there may be something to smelling pheromones, or it may just be other senses that we're not able to totally measure in them yet. But it does see, I've had some people suggest that maybe these creatures are what you might think of as an emotional vampire, you know, where they sort of are able to feed off fear. And that, of course, is one of those very speculative theories. But I try to keep an open mind, because I don't claim to know for sure what it is.
Are we dealing with creatures that are a little different from what we've always believed to be the traditional werewolves?
Great point, George. Very much so. Yeah, these are not, according to witness observations, anything like Lon Chaney sprouting fur, elongating his nose into a muzzle, torturous limbs, you know, slowly stretching into dog limbs, anything like that. These creatures do not appear to have any sort of human features to them, other than that they walk upright, run upright, and carry things in their forepaws. Often, some people even observe them drinking from a stream using their forepaws.
Well, a raccoon does that too.
Yeah, it can happen, you know. But when you see a large animal like that doing it, it looks
human.
It looks human, and it looks odd. The other thing that people say is that they feel these things have an uncanny intelligence about them, that they're strangely interested and curious about them as humans, and that they're very malevolent, too. They'll say things like, I felt it was angry that I saw it, you know, or I felt it was just really, you know, had a very superior attitude toward me, you know, like it was leering or jeering. And that's just not something you hear people say about animals in the wild. You know, when's the last time you heard somebody say, well, I saw this bear, and it was angry at me, or I thought the bear was leering at me. You know, it's just a really unusual observation that I hear time and time and time again.
Linda, tell us a story about the couple from Maine and what happened to them.
Yes, this is in my new Real Wolfman book, and it's one of the most extraordinary encounters that I've recorded in 20 years, partly because the credibility of the couple, it's a middle-aged well-to-do couple that were renting a farmhouse near Palmyra, Maine, several years ago. And they had this habit of sitting out on their front porch drinking coffee late at night, and there were deer that used to go through their yard, so they kept the spotlight handy. Every once in a while, they'd shine it and see if there were deer. They both got this very ominous feeling, shone the spotlight on the yard, and there were 5, 6 to 7 foot tall, upright canines coming toward them on the yard, 3 on one side, 2 on another, flanking them. And they were only 20 feet away by the time they shone the spotlight on and discovered they were there. Needless to say, they backed into their house very quickly. The wife had asked the man to keep his guns in the garage, so he wasn't able to, you know, run out and get the detached garage open and get his gun. So they went in the house. They actually called 911. 911 told them to call a game warden. The game warden told them to just stay in the house and lock the doors all night. And as far as I know, never did come out and investigate or anything like that. So they did the best they could. They went upstairs to where their daughter was sleeping. They had the spotlight with them. They shone it down on the yard, and there were 5 pairs of yellow-green eyes staring back up at them. Somehow they'd either followed their lights in the house, you know, as they moved through the house, or somehow they knew to end up right under that bedroom window, and they stay there all night, just sort of melting away finally with the dawn.
Quivering.
And they took photos of, they found their big footprints, which looked like giant
footprints. Have they been authenticated?
Well, for some reason, as often happens, the film didn't work, or not film, excuse me, the digital camera didn't work.
Oh, jeez.
So nothing came out, which happens strangely, you know, battery. It's the same thing that happens with many paranormal investigations is that camera batteries seem to run out. I've had that happen to me, too.
Well, we hear what happens with ET sightings over vehicles.
Right.
The cars die.
Exactly,
like
exactly. So they didn't have photos of the footprints, but I interviewed them at some length. Both the husband and the wife provided separate sketches which matched. And I, you know, seldom have talked to such, you know, ordinary, credible people that just were completely perplexed as to why they and their lawn were selected, although they thought it might have something to do with the pond and the deer, because water is a big factor in sightings hotspots. There's almost always some kind of water there. And I've noticed that these creatures like Bigfoot seem to follow deer trails around.
Interesting. Well, it's an easy prey, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, and a tasty one.
I've never eaten deer meat.
Oh, it's, well,
have you?
I have. My husband is a deer hunter.
I bet you probably ate roadkill, didn't you?
No, I'll tell you, in southeastern Wisconsin, we have wonderful corn-fed deer. And the venison tastes like the choicest beef steak. So it's a treat if you get a deer from around here.
I've just got these weird eating habits. I you know, if I know what something truly looks like, I generally might not eat it. You know, it's strange. Anyways, these creatures, are they more supernatural than natural?
Well, that's the question. You know, I mean, most of the sightings, and I would estimate well over 90% of them, don't claim that the animal did anything that a natural animal couldn't do. Dogs and wolves can walk and run on their hind legs. There are certainly plenty of examples of that throughout YouTube. They just don't normally do it unless they're either trained and motivated to do so by a human, or in the wild occasionally if they're missing a forelimb. There's a great video of a bear missing a forelimb that's running around on its hind legs. But none of the reports I've ever had have said that the creature was missing a forelimb or seemed crippled in any way. And, in fact, very often the creature will be seen or initially spotted on its hind legs and walking along or running along, and then it drops to all fours or vice versa. So that makes them extra elusive, because when they want to, you know, get around and not be noticed too much, they can go on all fours, and you would just think, well, there's a really big weird wolf dog hybrid or some kind of weird dog or something like that.
Linda, give us your website. Where do we get your new book, Real Wolfman?
Real Wolfman is available on all of the web stores, bookstores. Barnes and Noble has it, and the website where you can also find a link is just go to lindagodfrey.com.
All right, we're going to come back in a moment. Linda, we're going to take some phone calls with you, perhaps even stories about other encounters. You never know. And when we come back in just a moment, I also want to get your take on Native American beliefs and their lore. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take a walk on the paranormal side with Jeffrey Mishlove, so make sure you're part of that. When we come back in a moment with Linda Godfrey, we'll continue chatting about our work, Real Wolfman, and also take some of your phone calls as well. Linda, Native American belief or folklore, what have they said over the years?
Well, it's really interesting because although Native American lore in this country has this wonderful, rich, and varied background, so they're not monolithic by any chance, by any means. But one thing that I've heard over and over from different tribal elders that I've interviewed is that they believe both that this creature, the Dogman, and Bigfoot are spirit animals primarily that come from what they call the spirit world. We might translate that as another dimension. And that when they come here, they're fully real, physical, and corporeal. They need to eat some kind of meat or other food to have energy. But when they want to, they can go back to their own world, which explains why you never find a Bigfoot body, and also would help explain, you know, how so many of these large carnivores can occupy seemingly small spaces that might seem too small for them, for a breeding mm-hmm. population. You know, so in a way, that paradigm answers a lot of the questions raised by the data I've observed, you know, in many ways. But on the other hand, so many encounters just don't include any sort of supernatural experience, and it just makes you wonder if perhaps maybe there is some type of or subtype of wolf species, perhaps some that has a greater degree of dog genes in them, and many of them do. That's supported by the fact that dark coats, geneticists have learned dark coats on wolves are related to dog genes being in the mix there somewhere.
Are we getting more reports or less reports than a few years ago?
Well, it seems to me that they're coming in a little bit more fast and furious, you know, and I don't know if that is because there are actually more animals being seen or whether it's because more people are aware of me and my work and just know where to go and report it now, because they're not all new. Many of them are people reaching back into their childhood and saying they're glad they finally have somebody to tell this to. You know, so it's hard to really interpret it, but I certainly have no shortage of reports, and your show is a very great big help.
Sure
in
is.
That regard.
Well, we may have more. Let's go to Steve, first-time caller, Jackson, Tennessee. Steven, go ahead.
How are you doing today?
Good,
thanks,
Steve.
Mm-hmm. I'm calling, I just kind of got online for just a moment while ago and seeing your topic for the night.
Perfect timing, Steve.
Great. About 2.5 to 3 years ago, it was wintertime, heavy frost on the ground. I've got two very large dogs. One's about 125, 130 pounds. The other's like a 80-pound dog, very able dogs. They were dark, barking real loud one night. I live in the country. And I go outside to see what it was, and I stood on my carport and watched something walk through my yard. I spoke to the screener and told them, I'm a country boy. I've seen all kind of animals, from bobcat to coyotes, you know, you name it. I've seen it.
You've been there, yeah.
I cannot tell you what this was. It was huge. When I say huge, my dogs froze up just like I did and sat there and just watched at it in complete awe. Like, what in the world? It was really, really wide at the shoulders. The head was huge, bigger than a St. Bernard's head, bigger than a St. Bernard. I'd say this thing was pushing 200 pounds or better.
I'm going to bring you in, Linda, with him. Go ahead, because you may have some questions for Steve.
Yeah, I'm just curious, did you get a good look at the shape of its head or any other...
Yeah. Yes, he was probably about 40 feet from me and never acknowledged me. I might as well have not been there. He didn't study me or my dogs, and we were all sitting there trying to figure out what it was. And it just so happened to be under my security light in my yard. So I got a really good look at him. The color appeared to be mostly black,
mm-hmm.
Very dark color, large head, huge, erect, pointed ears.
Okay. Well, that rules out Bigfoot.
No, it wasn't a Bigfoot.
No, I can tell.
And it was on all fours. It was big enough it looked like he could get up and walk on, too, but it was on all fours. Long, long, curved nose. The only thing I've seen anything remotely that resembled this was a sci-fi TV show.
Did it look like an anteater? You've seen those, haven't you?
Oh, no. This was not. This was a canine species. Again, large nose. I'm going to say 8 inches long. You got to understand, this animal was massive. Its shoulders were so wide, and you could see the muscles ripped down its front end. Really wide at the chest. And are y'all familiar with the German Shepherd?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Great dog.
You know how it's got the sway back, and the rear end's kind of more nailed than the front?
Did you notice any eye shine color from the security light?
No, I could not tell you the eye color.
What are you looking for there, Linda? Something red?
Well, actually, almost every sighting of the upright canine, the eyes are the standard yellow, green, or gold color of a canine.
Okay.
And a Bigfoot or a bear would usually be a red, a dull red.
Steve, if you had to guess what it might be, could you?
Am I speaking to George Norris?
I hope that's the show you called.
Oh, my God, I'm honored. I didn't know who was hosting tonight. Like I said, I just poured online and seen the topic, and I've been dying to tell somebody about this.
Yes, you've got us, indeed. But, I mean, what do you think it was, Steve?
Well, y'all mentioned hybrid of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all, I've seen every kind of dog there is, I think, or in this part of the country anyway. I live in West Tennessee. And it looked like a big, awesome werewolf that you would see on a sci-fi show, y'all. It was incredible.
Did you have the feeling that it was pretty
big? Big, erect ears, long, bushy tail.
Okay.
Again, it got real narrow at the back end like a German Shepherd,
mm-hmm.
except it was 3 to 4 times bigger than any German Shepherd I've ever seen.
Linda, I want you to give Steve your email address. We've got a million calls here coming in for you, but I want him to be able to send you some more details. Do you have some kind of email address that you can give out?
Sure. Anybody can email me at lindagodfrey99@gmail.com.
One more time.
lindagodfrey99@gmail.com.
Simple enough. Stephen, thank you. Whatever he saw was an unusually strange creature.
Yeah, I would say so. And I've had really quite a few other encounters very similar. A huge, huge creature that looks like a dog, but not quite, and described very, very much as he said. I would like to know what his sense was of whether it was pursuing something else or what he thought it was doing in his yard.
What did you think of that guy who dressed up like a Bigfoot?
Oh, my goodness.
And got hit by a car?
You know, I hate to say I told you so, but I've been warning people not to do that sort of thing.
It's not just funny.
No, just for that reason for years, because not only are you endangering yourself, I mean, he got killed after being hit by 2 cars, you're also committing public fraud and endangering the public safety. You know, he could have easily caused a bad car accident and hurt more people than himself. So, you know, other than just being generally against all hoaxing because it just wastes people's time and money's the issue, you know, there's a huge public safety issue involved. And so I'm really sad about it. But I hope it's a good lesson and prevents some other people from being hurt or killed.
Let's go to Tuolumne, California. Here's Lori's turn. Go ahead, Lori.
Hi, George and Linda. Hi. It is great to be talking to you.
Yeah.
I had kind of 2 questions, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
First one was, have there ever been reported encounters where people were not afraid of the Wolfman? Or the wolf hybrid, I should say.
Okay, and what's your second question?
Is Has there ever been any indication that these creatures have either language or culture?
All right. Take that one first, Linda.
Well, there was one incident in 1936 where a night watchman encountered what looked like one of these creatures digging in an Indian burial mound, and he thought that it uttered the word Gadara, which is the region around present-day Israel where Jesus was supposed to have cast demons out of one or two madmen, depending on which chapter you read, and then they went into the swine that then went into the sea. That's the only time I've had anybody report anything that sounded like a word. And as for culture, you know, no behavior has ever been observed that would indicate that they have anything like a system of writing or, you know, they have paws and they seem to hunt like wild animals hunt.
And what about people not being afraid when they see these things?
It's rare, but it sometimes happens. I know back on Bray Road, where it all began, back in the early 90s, one woman who was driving through a cornfield lane to take lunch to her husband almost ran right into it. It was right in front of her car, and she locked eyes with it. And she said she was not afraid. She was just amazed at the power of the animal. And maybe it was because she felt safe in her car. I'm not sure. I've never had anybody who encountered it right out, mano a mano in the fresh air, that said they weren't afraid. So,
if we had a massive government effort, they spent a lot of money, sent a lot of people, scientists out in the woods, either for wolfmen or dogmen or Bigfoot, do you think we could finally get the evidence we're looking for, and maybe even find someone, a creature?
It's possible, and, you know, I don't totally discount the idea that they may already be doing that, and we're just not privy to the results. I think it's more likely with Bigfoot because the Bigfoot seems to habituate to certain areas and stay around longer. I get the sense that the dog man is more of a traveling sort of creature and is not likely to be found in one area, you know, for very long periods of time. So how would you know really where to concentrate all of your manpower and look unless you knew right away where all the most recent sightings were and could go there immediately?
Let's go to Bloomington, Illinois. It's Corey's turn, east of the Rockies. Hello, Corey. That's not going to work. Let's go to Trenton, Tennessee. Shane's with us, first-time caller. Hi, Shane.
Hi, Shane.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good, Shane.
Man, fantastic to get in touch with y'all.
Oh, I'm glad you did. Go ahead.
Actually, not too far from your first caller, just right up the road from Jackson, Tennessee.
That's right.
My experience was in North Georgia, actually. We live in a extremely small community about 20 miles north of Atlanta. And what got my attention was, of course, I was online, and it's ironic because we lived in an area that was heavily, heavily hunted for such a small rural area. Had a hybrid wolf dog, Alaskan wolf and a Malamute mix. Every night and every morning, he would get extremely irritable. The hunters would come through, and the deer would, of course, run. Well, we thought it was the hunters that was running the deer. My hybrid wolf, he called him Lobo, he broke free one night. We found him about an hour before the sun had totally set. He was hunkered down in a little ditch below a tree. He had tangled. He's about 110-pound canine. I turned around. He was hunkered down. I turned around to see three wolf-like creatures standing upright. They had a deer carcass in front of him. I don't know if he had tried to tangle with them for this carcass, but they all looked at me.
Wow.
And the reason I'm calling is because there's a lot of controversy over there. Are they intelligent? Or are they just a different species of wolf?
Right.
I would lean towards just a different species of wolf because I clapped two sticks together, making loud noise, and started hollering because I had no weapon, which was my first instinct.
Right.
They cowered and turned and ran. These animals were about 6 foot tall,
mm-hmm.
very, very wolf-like. And I have a pet, you know, our pet was a wolf. Of course, he was white. He was an Alaskan wolf, and they were very dark, matted, like a timber wolf, similar, identical to a wolf. The only difference was very, very broad chest, more like a linebacker in the NFL.
That's something I've heard before, and your entire description is very consistent, right down to them wanting to run and avoid contact with humans. That's just...
I don't blame them, do you?
No. No, I don't either. But I'm glad they didn't hurt your dog, because they have been known to kill dogs. People have seen them do that.
To protect themselves or for food or what?
It could be just to protect themselves or to defend their territory. You know, canines are often like that. But I'm just glad that you and your dog were okay from it. And I hope that you heard my email address. I would love to get your written account of this.
One more time then, Linda.
It is lindagodfrey99@gmail.com.
Based on all the stories you've covered, what do you think this creature might be?
Well, again, it's really hard to say not having it in front of me, but it always comes down to either some kind of specially adapted, very intelligent species of hybrid wolf dog because of the darker coats. I've come to learn more and more about that as the science of genetics has progressed. Or I also like the idea that Nick Redfern and some other researchers have, that these creatures, Bigfoot, UFOs, are all manifestations of a pervasive earth spirit that sort of inhabits the world around us that we're not usually aware of.
Sure.
And that they show up in these different forms, know how to be real when they're here, and have their own special purpose that we will never fully fathom.
You know, Linda, I come from the old camp that I'd love ETs to come from other planetary systems. I would love Bigfoot or the Wolfman to be a real creature, whether it's human or animal, but something physical. To me, there's just a romance behind that, other than something dimensional. You too?
You really want to believe that these things are there, and that it's something, because then there's something that maybe we can get our hands on and understand someday. You know, and I just think that's so typical of the human race, that we are just driven to satisfy our curiosity and learn all we can about the world that's out there, including the things that mystify us.
I was going to say, what is it about these creatures, Linda, that capture our imagination?
Well, you know, they look like something we should know. They look like our most trusted companions, dogs, or one of our most admired wild animals, wolves, but they don't act like them. You know, they get up, they run around, they look at us, they leer at us, they seem like they're studying us. Once in a while, there's a little supernatural action going on with them. And so, you know, that scares us, because when we don't understand why something is different than it should be, you know, our normal reaction is fear, and we want to learn about it, and we want to sort of conquer it that way, you know. And in learning, that's how we conquer our fears, by gaining knowledge.
All right, Linda, thank you so much. Good luck with your work. It's Real Wolfmen, True Encounters in Modern America. I hope to gosh we never have to encounter one of these creatures, but you just never know. I'll be back in a moment. Jeffrey Mishlove joins us. We'll be talking about his work, synchronicities, and other things as we take a walk on the paranormal side.